8-4-6-1-6, get in the mix, stir the batter. Constant chatter on CKUT 90.3 FM. Did I miss something?
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, Feminist Waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy. The Dragon Root Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragon Root understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance. We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
To Dragon Root Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. On today's show, it is October, which is also Queer History Month. Queer History Month celebrates and highlights the history and achievements of queer communities, and at McGill, they are celebrating with a series of screenings, panels, and workshops, as well as community events to celebrate, raise awareness, and advance education and visibility of queer communities. Here to chat more about Queer History Month is Miriam.
Can you introduce yourself and tell us about QHM?
Yes, thank you so much for having me this year. I'm Miriam Ben-Sliman. I'm an equity education advisor at McGill University. I'm also the chair of the planning committee for Queer History Month. And this is the third edition already this year. In an online setting due to COVID-19.
Can you tell us a bit about the history of Queer History Month at McGill and how it came about?
Yes, great question. So it started, I would say, when I started at McGill, I arrived at the end of 2017, and I realized that McGill was celebrating Black History Month and Indigenous Awareness Weeks. But I realized there was no celebration time specifically dedicated to think and reflect about 2S LGBTQIA plus histories. So this is when I came up with the idea of really planning Queer History Month that is celebrated in the world in October, but was not celebrated anywhere in Canada. Which made McGill the first institution to really plan a Queer History Month, and I take a lot of pride, but also I'm a bit sad to see that McGill is still the only institution celebrating Queer History Month. So I hope that other institutions will join in celebrating it. And the idea is that I often got asked the question, what is the difference with Pride Month? Because it's true, we have a month that is for Pride, for LGBTQ plus Pride, that is happening in June across Canada, in August in Montreal. But the difference is it's really to focus on the education, on raising awareness in an educational setting, institution. So I would say that is the difference, is really to insist on the education, highlighting the histories that are often forgotten or erased from curriculum. So this is where Queer History Month came up.
And speaking of raising awareness, so one of the goals, as you mentioned, is to raise awareness, advance education, and increase visibility of queer communities. Can you speak about the importance of this awareness and visibility, particularly on campus and at an institution like McGill?
Yes, totally. I would say it's at multiple levels. So Queer History Month, it's for people who are part of the 2S LGBTQIA plus communities to connect, find spaces really of connections, and learning about their histories, but also for people who are not part of the 2S LGBTQIA plus communities to learn more, to be better allies and to create spaces really of gathering, of connection, of solidarity. And that was the case from day one. And on campus, it was so important because when we think specifically of students who are part of 2S LGBTQIA plus communities, they are often more marginalized, isolated. So it's so important to create those spaces of gathering and connection, and which made it super challenging for this year, for this third edition, because everything is online. So how to still be able to create the spaces of solidarity, of resilience in the time of the pandemic, the context also of the anti-Black racism, and to do so in an online setting. So we had to rethink really the events and just try to still create spaces of engagement and for people to still be there and show solidarity together. And I think the events are showing us so far that it's the case. So we're very, very happy to see people coming and finding each other.
We had the chance to interview you last year for Queer History Month, and it is a different world now, as you mentioned, transitioning this year's events to online. I guess, how can you tell us a bit the planning, how the planning came about for this year's Queer History Month, and how, in terms of the themes and events, and how did you ensure to center intersectionality and accessibility for the events?
Yes, excellent question. I would say for the planning, one positive thing I would say that we got throughout this going on an online setting is that we had more time to do better and reflect on the accessibility, and going online actually made it easier for anyone to access it and just join us, because since everything is on Zoom and all our events are free, anyone anywhere in the world could just connect and attend our events, which was not the case before. In person, you had to be really in Montreal to come and attend our events. So we worked also very hard providing live captioning and ASL interpretation, so to really, really improve the accessibility. And I feel those are very important practices that we hope to keep, even if, and not if, but when we will be able to meet again and have events in person, but to still keep those very important practices of accessibility. So I would say that played a huge part into the planning. We still wanted, also because of the context of the pandemic and anti-Black racism, to really give the mic and highlight activists, and specifically thinking of Black, queer and trans activists who have always been are still at the forefront of LGBTQ plus rights throughout history. So that was very important for us to also have connections with local activists and local community organizations, because Black Queer History Month is about creating these connections, not just within McGill, but also outside McGill, and thinking also beyond the month of October. So what can we do the rest of the year too? That is an important question. So, and it brings us back really to community, to finding a sense of belonging. And that's what we have been trying to do. And in terms of the intersectionality, totally, all our events have been planned with that specific context in mind, and we had our keynote speaker was Dr. Shamindra Wirawardena, who is an amazing trans feminist scholar from Sri Lanka, who gave a lecture on decolonial politics and the importance also of thinking in an intersectional way and decolonizing our thinking and our politics. We had also a lovely writing workshop with Smokey Sumac, who is an amazing Two-Spirit Indigenous poet. And we're having also an event specifically dedicated to Black queer and trans activism in collaboration with the Simone de Beauvoir Institute, IGSF, BSN. We have also one thing we didn't, I feel, maybe highlight enough in the first two editions, so it was very important for us to highlight it now, was an event around the intersections of queerness and disability. That is something that is often forgotten, not talked enough about. So we're partnering with DON Canada, who's an amazing community organization. If you don't know DON Canada, I invite you to check their work. The idea is really to center and give the mic to the most marginalized voices, even within the 2S LGBTQIA plus communities, because this is what Queer History Month is really about.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned so we're about halfway through the month of October, so that there's already been a few events, the keynote speaker. What were some of the takeaways from the events on decolonial politics, feminist futures, as well as event poems for the end of the world?
For me, and I would say this is maybe where my bias will come, because I studied and graduated in political science and international studies. So I was very, very excited and interested around this event. And I think Shamindra gave an incredible talk, forcing us to rethink the way we think about the politics, about our advocacy, about our solidarity, even. So for me, that was a very, very important talk, and even more today with the context of the pandemic, of the anti-Black racism, also the anti-Indigenous racism that we see and that we've seen in the news in Canada. To really, really take the time to think about how we act, what are the policies that we put in place, and how we can really be in solidarity together in a very intersectional feminist way, with a decolonial lens, and thinking also with the solidarity between South-South countries, I would say, because we often think about global politics, like you have the North and the Global South, but how, and we've seen that with the COVID-19 pandemic, the actual expertise that came from many countries in the Global South. So to think about all these very, very important topics and issues, I was very, very, very excited, and I learned a lot. And I think people also learned a lot and engaged a lot. The Q&A was also very great, with people joining us also beyond Montreal, which was great to see. So very, very happy about that event. And about the other events that happened, so the workshop with Smokey, again, was a perfect fit. He released last year a book of poetry, called Love Poems for the End of the World. He didn't know we would have a pandemic in 2020, but I would say that I've been returning to his poems a lot lately. And so we decided to just bring him to lead a writing workshop. And that was so needed. That was very a healing space where people could write about their feelings in these difficult times, and share thoughts and writings and just a space full of love and to benefit from Smokey's really incredible talent and generosity. It was just a great space.
Well, that sounds exactly what's needed right now.
Yes.
So I guess looking forward to the upcoming events. So there's an event on Black, Queer, and Trans activism, as well as a collaboration with Dawn, Queerness and Disability. What can people expect from the upcoming event?
So I would say very much so in the same context. One thing I forgot to mention is that we actually have a theme this year that is called Love Stories of Solidarity and Resilience. And this is exactly what we've been trying to do throughout all the months and the events. So our two other events that are planning are the Black, Queer, and Trans activism. And the idea was really to pass the mic to local, amazing Black, Queer, and Trans activists from Montreal and one person from Toronto, which will be important to hear, to compare the knowledge and practices, and the Queerness and Disability panel with Dawn Canada. We also have some events that are planned by our partners. So there are some events that are led by the main QHN committee, but we have other events. So the School of Social Work is also planning a film screening and panel discussion on the documentary Transgender Parents. There's also an event planned by OSVERS, the Office for Sexual Violence Response, Support and Education, called Digital Sexual Expression and Consent. So very, again, important in these digital and online times. And the Faculty of Medicine is also having an event around really centering and focusing on a trans-affirmative healthcare and education. So we have the calendar of events on our website, on the mcgill.ca/equity. And if you look for Queer History Month 2020, you can find the whole calendar of events. But I would say, yes, we always had in mind our theme of really resilience and solidarity. And we hope that people can find that sense of belonging online and just being in connection with each other. I feel that's what people are really craving for in this COVID time, where we're a bit isolated from each other, to still have those spaces, even online. Yes.
What do you hope the impact of Queer History Month and the theme of this year has on those who attend the events and the campus?
Very, very important question. I would say really the impact is for people who are not part of the 2S LGBTQIA plus communities to keep learning more, to keep being better allies, and highlighting the histories, so also for people who are in a teaching position to be aware of these histories and include them in the curriculum when they are teaching, and for people who are part of the 2S LGBTQIA plus communities to really be seen, be represented, have a sense of belonging. And for everyone to just connect with each other. I feel we are lacking connections in COVID times. And we saw that in the past in person, people were really just loving being in the space with each other and then keep doing the work beyond October. And the idea is to still provide these very, very much needed spaces, even if it's online. But to find ways to make it as interactive, as engaging as possible. And like I mentioned, anyone in the world can actually join us, so we don't have the barrier of being physically here. But I would say the impact is also thinking about our Black, Queer, and Trans students, staff, and faculty to really highlight the the history, like I mentioned, that Black queer and trans activists have had, and all the incredible fights they led and they are still leading, and to show this solidarity, to keep learning, to keep unlearning also some of the things that we've been taught that are not necessarily correct, thinking about the history around Black queer and trans activism, also around Indigenous history. So I would say it's really a month to learn and be in connection and in solidarity with each other. And the other theme is really around resilience. So to provide those very much needed spaces and healing spaces, and to continue the important work for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us about Queer History Month. If people want to attend the next events or learn more, where can they go?
So they can go on the mcgill.ca/equity and search for a really Queer History Month. Our next event is next week on the 20th. It's actually the Black Queer and Trans Activism Panel from 6 to 8 p.m. All registrations are open, are free. We are also on social media. On Facebook, on Instagram and Twitter, with the hashtag 2SQHM. So you can look up and invite your friends and colleagues.
All right. Well, thank you so much again.
or joined live in studio by Harleen. Take it away.
My girl, let me tell you what your hurt is made of. It is made from hands clasped over enough mouths, and you wonder why you were born with no appetite. Let me tell you what your weight is made of. It is made from the stories printed and folded so deep within your bones they are not words anymore, they are hauntings. Let me tell you what your heart is made of. It is made from lips and arms and whispers that were kept soft just for you. You ask me what our fight is made of. It is made of shields and screams and fists and dreams of night terrors and deep, deep breathing. Baby girl, let me tell you what your earth is made of. It is made of sisters holding up your skies from the water that bleeds from your eyes, eyes that have always been strong. And these waters, I know, are flowing now, dripping from your skin, from your hair into the ground, until the oceans are carrying your song. The sky is reflecting your waters, and your waters are on fire now.
Thank you. So for our listeners, Harleen is a poet. Can you tell, for our listeners who don't know, can you tell us a bit about you?
Yeah, so I'm a South Asian artist, poet, community worker, born and raised in Montreal, spent some time in Toronto, moved back because I love the city, and currently I'm working at the South Asian Women's Community Center as a youth worker, and actually my artistic practice intersects quite a bit with my community work, which I'm very lucky that it does because it makes it a lot of fun. And I run youth programmings, and a lot of them are art-based, and we do a lot of poetry and spoken word as well.
Awesome. And the piece you just shared, can you tell us a bit about it?
Sure. I wrote this piece actually for a short film by The Woman Power, which is a group of women and women of color based in Montreal, and they do projects and a lot of arts-based community building among women of color in Montreal. So I wrote this piece for a short film that they did, and it's called The Healing. But this is one of the pieces that I really love and always come back to, because even though it wasn't written for myself, I was kind of visualizing other young girls who would be watching the film, but I find it really empowering for myself as well to read it, and because I guess I'm a woman of color too, and I think we write for ourselves as well.
So writing poetry is not too new to you, but relatively new
in the
scheme of your life. So can you tell us about your journey into writing poetry?
For sure. So it's actually, I find it really, I just can't believe how I found poetry as a kind of tool to express my story. It kind of happened, it was not at all intentional. So when I think about when I started writing poetry, I often think about what I was going through at that time. I was in situations that were really abusive and in a lot of distress. I was struggling a lot with my mental health, so depression and so much anxiety that, you know, often I wouldn't even remember nights that I've had because of such high anxiety. And I guess as a way to process, or maybe one night I just needed to write something, and I think it was a way of coping and processing. And what I ended up writing through this time is a lot of poetry. And I think poetry, because there's a lot of freedom in poetry, as opposed to, you know, like I've always used art as a way of expression, like painting and photography. But in that moment, I think I really needed to find words for what I was going through. But at the same time, not... You know, it in a more creative way. Like the first poem I wrote is called A House in a Storm, and it's written entirely in metaphor, but it felt so real at the time. So I think I found that freedom in poetry, that you can share your story however you want, you know, add some line breaks wherever you want, or write, you know, a free-flowing sentence for pages. It can be long or short. And it doesn't need to sound in any particular way. So I really felt very liberated in the medium.
Mm-hmm. And so, you play with a lot of different, forms, or it seems like you don't stick to the rules necessarily, mm-hmm. when you're writing. So I think sometimes when we think about poetry, you think of that, like, high school.
Yeah.
Here are the rules. You have to follow it. I know you do a lot of workshops teaching people how to write and to work with poetry. So, can you tell us a bit more about how did you feel like you had to get over that barrier of, like, okay, that's what poetry is. Mm-hmm. I have to do this now. Or yeah.
It's funny because I think when I started writing it, it was just a moment of desperation, and it felt so therapeutic to write. And when I say therapeutic, I don't mean it felt good, but it was just a way of taking what's inside and breathing air into it and bringing it to the surface a little bit and working with that and expressing it. So I didn't really even think of labeling what I was writing as poetry, but since I started writing, I was connecting with local artists and listening to a lot of spoken words. So I realized that, oh my goodness, poetry can actually be anything that you write, and spoken word can just be anything that you perform. And you mentioned the rules, and I do a lot of youth workshops, and I always talk about the rules and what are the rules, just to kind of create this, let's talk about these rules and who is deciding what these rules are, and how have people broken these rules? Because poetry is actually why I love it, is because there are no rules. You can write all over the page. You can write, your poem can be one word, or it can go on for pages. You can be entirely in metaphor. It actually, there is no rules in poetry. That's what I found. And so, the only thing I say in workshops is being authentic to yourself and your story. Not even as a rule, but just, as a way of just, taking ownership of your story, and part of that is not paying attention to the rules, because the rules don't fit everybody.
Mm-hmm. When you say being authentic to your own story, can you elaborate a bit more about that, and maybe what you encourage as a starting point?
You know, it's like really up to the person and what they want to write about. Mm-hmm. And every time I say your story, it doesn't need to be like nonfiction. Even fiction is a story, and it is the author's story in a way, because they brought it out of themselves. But I encourage writing what's, and it is terrifying to write what's really your story in your own words, as opposed to trying to copy someone else or trying to fit another standard. And this is terrifying, and I don't do this perfectly, but I think ultimately I'm using poetry also. Sometimes it's not even about the poetry, it's just about feeling confident about who we are and how we tell our stories, and not trying to fit another set of standards.
Mm-hmm. And so you write poetry, but you also share your poetry and perform your poetry. Is the process different between those two? What's it like?
It's funny. When I started writing poetry, like I mentioned, it was really in the moment of desperation. And at the time, I didn't ever think I'd share the poetry or even keep my poetry. I was almost writing it like a diary, where it's private. I was writing very privately, wasn't even sharing that I was writing. I was just, because they were in moments of such distress that it was just a way of coping. But it's funny with the diary, even like when you're young growing up, or maybe you still write in diaries and that's totally amazing. It's almost like you're writing privately, but you're writing to this hypothetical person. And that's what it felt like when I was writing poetry, I think, because I felt so alone in whatever I was going through. But after about, I would say, like 5 months, which isn't a long time, I started thinking about what I had written and wondering, oh my goodness, are other people doing this? Like, this feels really good, even though it feels really bad in the moment. But for the first time in my life, I was reclaiming my story in a way. And especially because I was in a situation where I felt so, like small and like disempowered, writing my story felt really great. So I was wondering, I was like, do other people do this? I want to talk about this. This is so amazing. So I started connecting with more people. For example, the South Asian Youth Collective, and even in workshops and asking youth, and drop in like, well, how do you tell your story? How do you write as well? And that led to, creating spaces where we did workshops. For example, I talked once on the show about unraveling in rhymes, mm-hmm. Which was a workshop we organized, for women of color and for gender non-conforming and non-binary folks. And when we started the workshops, I started thinking about performing just because I wanted to connect with people. And I saw other people performing as well, especially in this city. And I was so, you know, inspired, I feel like is not the right word. It was more like, oh, that feels really good to hear this person's story. I wonder if it also feels good to perform, to be in that position. So when we started doing workshops and talking, a lot of us had not had experience performing, except for the facilitators we got in. But a lot of us really felt nervous about performing or sharing our story. I think that's where it's coming from. We were women of color. So for so long, our stories have been silenced, our voices have been silenced, that I will speak for myself, I got really comfortable in that. But when we were together and sharing our stories with each other, there was this like collective energy of, we kind of built confidence collectively, and not just confidence, but, you know, hearing and connecting with other women of color and listening to their stories and feeling so amazing because you realize you're not alone in what you're feeling. And, you know, a collective healing is a thing, and it's part of individual healing, I think. I feel like one can't happen without the other. Mm-hmm. So performing actually happened when we started sharing our stories with each other and realized how important our stories are to be heard. And not just for folks that are not going through what we're going through, so therefore they don't know, but also for people who we do have common experiences with, to expand our collective healing, I think, and connect with more people, even if it's just through performing and sending our stories to the audience.
And speaking of sharing, mm-hmm. You have another poem you can share with us.
So I recently wrote this poem, which is entirely in metaphor, but I found the first line very relatable this morning, although the weather's better this morning, but after the storm we just had. So this is why I picked the poem, even though that's not actually what I was talking about. All right. It's been winter for 8 years. By now, everything has frozen. Some days you think about what the thaw will look like. Sometimes when things have been frozen for so long, you realize after they thaw that they have gone rotten. I wonder if that also happens to people. Through this chronic winter, life has become mechanic, but not in any way that makes living easier. Chronic winter makes life about chronic battle for survival. You are always, always fighting the winter, even when you learn its nature. Some days you dream about flowers. They float around you like dandelion seeds. They always feel like magic. The flowers have color, deep oranges and reds and so many shades of violet. The flowers feel warm in these dreams. You feel warm. During this deep freeze, you don't notice how unclean you are, because even the dirt freezes. Your bed, your clothes, your skin, probably dirty, underneath the sheet of frost. You wonder if it's spring somewhere else. It must be spring somewhere. Summer even. I dream about breathing into the air around me without creating fog.
So, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
That's very timely. And so,
yeah, that's what I thought.
Can you tell me a bit about that poem?
Yeah. I often, I go back and forth between telling my story in a way that would satisfy someone listening. Like, is my story making sense to somebody? Will someone actually understand? So I get really hesitant using metaphor or abstract imagery. But recently, I've gone through workshops and sharing. I've realized that that's the imagery is what sticks with people I've shared with. And that, you know, the imagery is something or the metaphor is something, but really it's the feeling that I'm trying to share. And if people are really listening, they'll understand. And that's what I've told people in workshops too. It's like, if you're sharing a feeling, just share it the way you feel, the way it feels right to share. And people will understand. Don't worry about other people listening. And so this is seasons and winter and spring and flowers is imagery that comes to me a lot. So I've been using it a lot more in my writing and not hesitating as much anymore, because I feel like people who understand or can connect will do so no matter how abstract it is.
Mm-hmm. And earlier we were talking about unraveling rhymes and sharing poetry. So with local, other local poets, artists, people in the community. So who are some of your local influences and influences more generally?
Yeah. I'm so lucky that, it feels really strange to think about how everything unraveled. I like that word. That's why it's the title of the workshops. Because when I started writing, it was at a point where I was feeling connected to my community and with the South Asian Youth Collective and through my community work and just connecting with so many amazing people that I ended up seeing a lot of friends go through similar artistic journeys and see that process. For example, Shanice Nicole started writing, started performing not long before I did. And that's not a coincidence because we had done collaborated on a lot of community work in the past or worked together. And I just saw kind of her taking ownership of her own story and really using spoken word to send a message. And it really resonated with me. So I'm really grateful for that. And she's an amazing poet. Another poet is Stephanie Lawrence. I saw one of the first performances I saw was during the Fringe Festival. I think it was called Extreme States. And I think that was a title, but because I love that title. And I loved her performance. And I mention her because she really uses, or for that show anyway, talks about mental health through her poetry. And that's something, you know, that's a narrative I really struggled to reclaim for myself, because mental health is so stigmatized. And how we talk about our mental health is very determined by society's kind of monitoring and policing of how we talk about mental health, you know. And it's a very Western model. It's very kind of falls under Western medicine, and it's very pathological. And I always felt really alienated with the language that's used in mainstream mental health. And so reclaiming the experience of mental health for myself, using my own words and my own experiences, not necessarily seeing myself as the victim or as someone that needs to be cured, but as a mind and body and spirit that's going through an experience, and that experience is important and stems from so much intergenerational history and trauma and power. And so, I'm going off, but Stephanie Lawrence really talks about mental health in a way that felt like she's taking ownership of her own story or reclaiming her own story. And I was like, wow, this is something I really want to do, because I don't know how to talk about my mental health. Or maybe I do. And so let's figure that out. And so I started. That's a major theme in my work, actually.
Mm. I was actually just going to ask you about major themes in your work.
Yeah.
I know mental health is one of them, but what themes do you enjoy working with, or is it an enjoying kind of process?
Yeah. Again, I feel like all my poetry is about mental health, and as well as other chronic illness and chronic pain, because that's what I'm experiencing all of the time. So it's going to come out no matter what subject I talk about. But I like experimenting with many different subjects and whatever I'm going through in the moment, whether that's, you know, thinking about my identity or thinking about intergenerational trauma, or even just feeling lots about romantic love. I always find, you know, the process I have for writing poetry is I do a lot of free writing at first, and I just kind of let myself write what comes to me and breathe into my story a little bit, or into myself, and just give, you know, there's so many stories inside of us that we don't even know yet. It's a process of learning about ourselves. So I don't like to constrain myself to a specific subject, because that's what I used to do. I used to be like, this is what I talk about. This is what my art is going to be about. But I realized that this isn't about, again, presenting your art to satisfy anyone in particular, but just to learn about yourself and make peace with your own experiences.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I have so much more to ask you, but we have to wrap up, unfortunately, soon. But maybe we can end with one more piece from you.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let me see here. All right. The pain starts at the base of my spine and sends its vibrations through every nerve of my body. It wants to be heard. How do I tell my body to break intentionally, to hurt sensibly, to feel rationally? My body's muscles are making melodies like guitar strings until the ground feels like it's strumming its existence with me. Music that is not beautiful, but that is honest. My universe, the universe is riding my waves. It's listening to my story.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah.
For people who want to find out more about your work, I know you recently launched a website.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they find you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I was so happy to come on air and talk about my poetry and my community work because I love it so much. Yeah, for people who want to get in touch or stay updated because there's so many upcoming projects and to be released and collaboration. So you can get me on Facebook. My artist name is Harleen, H-A-R space L-E-E-N. My handle is Har Poetry, har.poetry, sorry. Instagram, give me a follow. My website, yes, that I recently just launched. If you want to find out more about me and my story or for bookings or to see what projects are coming up, is stormcalledharleen.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And thanks so much again.
Thank you.
We've come to the end of today's edition of Dragonroot Radio, but be sure to tune in next week when we have more reports on gender-based issues. It's okay.
Sarah's excited to celebrate her birthday at a restaurant. She's thought about it all week. She invited her friends. She got a new dress. She went to the restaurant. She wasn't allowed in the restaurant. She had to put away her new dress. She couldn't see her friends. And she thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. A vaccination passport is now required to enter certain public spaces. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Production Nuit d'Afrique invites you to celebrate its 35th anniversary in music. Come and discover 10 musical groups from November 2nd to the 7th at the legendary Club Ballatoon. Don't miss these free special evening shows. For more information, productionnuitdafrique.com.
Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much.
McGill University's 4th annual Queer History Month is taking place this October. Join in later in the month for more exciting programming, including a chat with an elder session from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, October 19th, a zine-making workshop on Thursday, October 21st from noon to 2 p.m., a trans and non-binary in academia panel discussion on Wednesday, October 27th from 6 to 8 p.m., and finally a queer open mic night with performances by Opera Queens on Thursday, October 28th, also from 6 to 8 p.m. Queer History Month will be opened and closed by Elder Gawenodas Sedalio Fazio. Visit the Equity at McGill webpages, www.mcgill.ca/equity, for a complete list of Queer History Month events organized by McGill's Office of the Provost and Vice Principal Academic and their partners. The goal of McGill's Queer History Month is to raise awareness, advance education, and increase visibility of 2S LGBTQIA communities by recognizing their histories and contributions, building bridges, and bringing together McGill students, staff, faculty, and alumni, and Montreal community members.
She see me work on my vertical growth. She see my journey and her info. She looked me up, said she heard of me before. She found a vibe that she listened to. Make a dance with no sop in the living room. She a fan and she watch all my interviews. Now she hang by the ball when I'm in the room. Man, I make myself way too accessible. I'm just hugging the fan, won't let go on my hand. And she say that I'm way too incredible. I can see that she making it sexual. Initially, I'm going for it. She fired the combo flow, and then I know she admired me. Little did I know that shorty was trying me. Asked if I'm open to privacy. She got a secret in her eyes like a something that she concealing. No, she hide it. But we ain't equal in her mind. I don't even see the demon that's inside her. She full of deceit. Her man in the crowd while I got her backstage, and she all in my ear saying, pull up on me. I'm peeping the play. He looking for her while she looking for me. Look, I only shoulda, coulda, woulda, bitches. Imagine she could be fucking with my riches. You bound to be stood up, can't fuck up my business. I want you tonight, but I don't want the digits. I know you look fly and I was kinda smitten, but moving twice shy cause I was already bitten. Look at you burning all these fucking bridges. I see you hurting, I ain't even with it. Coulda been you. Said it coulda been you. It coulda been you. Could've been you, ooh, 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 ooh. Could've been.